On the show today, Greece inching closer to a bailout, China's stock market still crashing, the hack on federal employee records only getting worse. Hey, but at least it's Friday, right? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Molly Wood, in for Kai Rizdahl, who is currently on his way to Greece. We'll be broadcasting the show live from Athens on Monday and Tuesday, whether there is or is not a deal. Today, Greece has proposed more austerity in return for a third bailout. And to be sure, there are some positive noises coming out of Europe. The French president says Greece's new request for a third bailout is credible. The Dutch head of the Euro group described it as thorough. For more on what's happening in Greece, let's get to the weekly wrap. I'm joined today by David Gura, reporter at Bloomberg TV, and Neela Richardson, chief economist at Redfin. Hey there.
Hey, Molly.
Hi, Molly.
So there's a deal on the table that seems worse than the deal that could have been on the table 2 weeks ago. And I guess what I'm wondering, Neela, is did we really have to go through all of this?
Yes, because this isn't an economic problem that we're seeing in Greece and with the EU. It's really a political problem. If you compare it to Detroit, Detroit had a lot of similarities in terms of its fiscal problems to Greece. You know, it had pension problems. It couldn't pay its workers. There was a lot of massive overspending. But no one thought that we'd boot Detroit out of the U.S. But that is exactly what's happening with the EU. I think the problems we're seeing in Greece is more about the EU than it is about Greece itself.
So Greece had to go through this exercise to convince the EU that it was serious, or vice versa. But David, what do you think are the odds that they're going to kick this can down the road again on Sunday?
Well, I think that we're coming to what must be the final deadline here. That's what everybody that I've talked to has been saying. So on Sunday, 28 leaders from the European Union are going to gather and they're going to give this a yay or a nay. Just to touch on something that Neela was talking about there about the sort of politicization of this. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that Alexis Tsipras, the prime minister of Greece, did something very shrewd here. That is, he took his plan to the Greek people. They voted on it. What's sort of crazy about this is they voted no on essentially what he's put forward here from what we know of the proposal. So much of it is so similar. You know, there's some difference in terms of what the fiscal targets are going to be, what these taxes are going to be going forward. But what it managed to do is galvanize his party, it seems, a bit around him. We're very familiar here in the States with the fact that in the Democratic Party, in the Republican Party, these are stratified parties. There are people on the far left. There are people on the far right. Same thing holds true there in Greece. And it seems like by going through this, there seems to be a little bit more cohesion among that Syriza party.
Sure. But what could be shrewd about then totally overriding the will of the people after inciting them to this vote?
You know, I think that what he would say is that that wasn't a referendum on keeping the country in the European Union or not. And maybe just looking at sort of the gravity of that possibility is propelling him to do this.
Neela, let's turn to China. I think we have a little bit of a tale of two crises going on. And some people seem to think that China is actually a bigger deal than Greece. Can you help us understand why what's happening there matters?
It matters because China is a leading economic force within the world, and right now they're engaged in bubbles across asset markets. We're paying a lot of attention to their stock market now. It lost $3 trillion in value, which is the size of an advanced economy. That's how much that stock market loss was. But we've also seen bubbles in China in their credit markets, in their real estate markets. And so in terms of the economy as being a solid, substantive, sustainable growth force, there's been a lot of doubt both in the real economy and in the asset market about China's path going forward.
David, is this a wave that is headed our way? Is there a point at which it'll start to affect us in the U.S.?
I don't know. It's been curious. As I've talked to people about this, a lot of people are making a real distinction between the Chinese economy and the Chinese market. And, you know, we've seen this push by the Chinese to buy a lot of stocks on margin. We saw just sort of crazy intervention here on the part of the Chinese government. I think that investors here in the U.S. are watching this with interest, with surprises. We saw this really crazy swing. I looked at the Shanghai Composite today, closed up again 4.5% or so. That's something that's going to give investors pause. Is it going to affect us directly over here? I would argue, I think that the Greece is the thing that's attracting more attention at this point.
And then quickly, I want to turn to the OPM hack. Numbers came out yesterday. Absolutely astonishing. Some 21.5 million Social Security numbers and very personal records stolen. So today, Catherine Archuleta, the head of the OPM, is out. Not a big surprise. Neela, do you think there's anything she could have done to prevent this in her 2 years?
Not alone. You know, it's stunning. And as a former federal employee that received a letter to my home talking about I did.
Wow.
I mean, it's amazing how this touches people. And it's also amazing that given the access the government has to personnel records and all kinds of data, the lack of IT support, the lack of technological infrastructure within the government itself. This is a problem that is systemic, not just in the office of personnel management, but pervasive across the government, maybe not to this degree, but the federal government needs a 21st century solution to its IT issues.
Yeah, it sounds like it was unrealistic to expect that one person was going to be able to take that on. That's David Gura from Bloomberg TV and Neela Richardson from Redfin. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
On Wall Street today, they're drinking the ouzo and feeling just fine. We'll have more when we do the numbers. A bit more on the drama in Greece before we move on to other things. It's far too soon to call anything done in a crisis that is half a decade long already. But as Greece came close to the edge of the abyss in the last 2 weeks, it caused extraordinary economic damage. And many Greek businesses are bearing the scars. From Athens, Stephen Beard reports.
I'm in the offices of Dioptra, one of Greece's busiest publishing houses. At least it was.
Much quieter than it normally is here.
It is, actually, yes.
The boss, Kostas Papadopoulos, says this deathly hush descended 2 weeks ago when the bank shut and his business ground almost to a standstill.
At the moment, we are 90% down in July.
And July is usually the best month of the year.
Think about it, 90% down. How can you survive?
Bookshops are ordering hardly any of his titles because the public has simply stopped buying. People could shop with a credit card or a check, but the limit on ATM withdrawals and the escalating atmosphere of crisis has freaked everyone out, he says, and that includes him.
Things have changed so dramatically in our lives and in our businesses that at the moment I feel as if I am a book specialist, but in a different country that I don't know anything about.
In other words, he's completely bewildered.
I don't know what books people like anymore. I don't know how much should we print. I don't know what's the price of a book. I don't know anything.
Importers, and Greeks import a lot of stuff, have been affected by the capital controls. In general, they can't send money out of the country. Foreign suppliers have to supply on credit. But would you? The man who runs this online travel agency, Philip Brinkman, says more than 35 airlines have refused to take any bookings from Greece.
Which makes it impossible for most Greek travel agencies to issue tickets for these airlines, so they can't sell them actually to their customers anymore.
But Brinkman isn't teetering on the edge of disaster. Far from it. He's half Greek and half German. He's routing his ticket purchases through his German office. And with German planning and efficiency, he's already expanded aggressively abroad.
That was the savior, let's say, for a company and the driver of the growth.
And it's left him well-placed to shift his headquarters out of Greece if the country's economy spirals out of control.
It would make sense, maybe, if things go really, really bad here, to relocate in order to have banking relations and in order to have, let's say, the legal headquarters of the company in a more stable environment.
Given the turbulence of the past 2 weeks, businesses here are understandably nervous. But behind the high walls and security cameras of this rather grim-looking compound near the airport, there's a safe haven at hand.
Here we have the Technical Operational Center. Here we have engineers from the 24/7 bases. They're over.
Welcome to Athens 2, a brand new high-tech bolt hole for companies fleeing civil unrest in the capital. Apostolos Kakos is the boss.
Things can go much worse, so as you have on a desert, we are an oasis on a desert. We are like that.
With its own power and water supply, Athens 2 can accommodate with maximum security up to 700 personnel. Several large companies have signed up to use the complex in case they're forced to leave Athens. As a Greek, you are hoping that it is not needed.
I mean, we are hoping for the best, but we have to plan for the worst.
As this week draws to an end, the air of imminent disaster, the prospect of a sudden uncontrolled exit from the euro seems to be receding, but business has been badly bruised. In Athens, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You can get answers to your basic questions about Greece by going to our site, isgreecesolventyet.com, and you can see all our coverage at marketplace.org, where you'll also find our live broadcasts from Athens on Monday and Tuesday. On to another disaster story, this one domestic. As you heard earlier, Catherine Archuleta stepped down from the Office of Personnel Management today. The bad news continues to pile up about the hack on that agency, which affected 22 million current, former, and prospective government employees. What is really shocking is the information the hackers got: work histories, addresses, fingerprints, and of course, social security numbers. So let's talk about that little 9-digit number. It carries a boatload of information about us, but what happens when that private identifier becomes increasingly public? Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson takes a look.
Your employer, your bank, your doctor, heck, even your kid's soccer team. Pretty much everyone asks for a social security number these days, but that wasn't the original idea.
When they started this system, there was this big room in downtown Baltimore, Maryland, that had these files, literally files, which had everybody's social security record.
Edward Berkowitz is a history professor at George Washington University. He says social security numbers were created in the 1930s to simply track how much people were paying into the system. In the 1960s, they were added to income tax returns. And it's just been gradually ballooning.
The cat's out of the bag.
Zeynep Tefekci at UNC Chapel Hill thinks we should have stopped using social security numbers as identifiers about a decade ago.
There are so many stolen databases of social security numbers out there that the idea that it's a private piece of information is, frankly, it's ridiculous. It's not. It just isn't.
But if not social security numbers, then what? Mark Rotenberg is with the Electronic Privacy Information Center.
The problem with the social security number, as with many other so-called universal identifiers, is that they're used in many different settings. So if they get breached in one setting, the practical consequence is that they've been breached in all settings.
The same way using one password for all your online accounts is asking for trouble, Rotenberg says we'd be better off with different numbers for different purposes. And the rule for governments, companies, everyone should be, if you can't protect it, don't collect it. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
The federal government this week proposed that Medicare should change how it pays for two of the most common medical procedures in the nation, hip and knee replacements. The change is part of a new healthcare focus on outcomes instead of one-off procedures. Right now, the cost and quality of hip and knee replacements is all over the map. So the proposed solution is to bundle the payment. Medicare would give hospitals a fixed amount of money to manage all costs, from prep to surgery to discharge. The hope is that this will save the nation $150 million over the next 5 years. From the health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein finds out what's the big deal with bundles.
File this under "you know you have a problem" when sometimes a knee replacement costs $16,500. Sometimes it costs twice as much. That's the problem the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, is trying to address with these bundled payments. The University of Michigan's Dr. David Miller.
The effort by CMS is destined to say, look, doctors, nurses, therapists, figure out the best pathway forward to help patients get the outcomes we're looking for.
What CMS is actually telling those doctors and nurses is that they now must live within a fixed budget. Dr. Tom Feely is with the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. He says federal health officials want to extract duplication, needless testing, and the sloppiness that's being baked into these procedures.
Right now, our healthcare system is dependent upon those unnecessary things that we do to sort of fund the way that we currently work.
In other words, CMS is experimenting with a major change in how it pays for care. And while there are lots of healthcare folks out there who say this is moving in the right direction, there's an important caveat to consider.
There's no proof that it works yet.
But Dr. Tom Tsai at Harvard says that's actually okay.
when we design new drugs, new interventions, we do trials to see if a new drug will work. Not all the new drugs work, but it's important to innovate so we can actually learn from these experiences.
Zai says just trying to tackle this issue represents major progress. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Yesterday, we told you about Procter & Gamble selling some of its beauty brands to Coty, but we misstated the size of the deal. All of P&G's beauty brands bring in nearly $80 billion a year. The ones being sold in this deal, though, actually add up to only $5 or $6 billion. Coming up,
corporations are now beginning to step up and say, our employees need opportunity.
Corporate America and higher education. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average surged 211 points, 1.2% to close at 17,760 as numbers closed up. Overall, the NASDAQ jumped 75 points, 1.5%, finishing at 49.97. The S&P 500 gained 25 points, 1.2% to end at 20.76. Everybody feeling a little better about Greece. For the week, the Dow was up 0.1%. The NASDAQ fell 0.2%, and the S&P was flat. Barracuda Networks, a cloud-based security, data security and storage company, slid 19% after lowering its forecast for this quarter. Helen of Troy Limited fell 10% after its earnings came in below expectations. Helen of Troy, which began as a wig store in El Paso, now makes hair dryers. I just thought you'd want to know. Badger Meter makes products to measure what flows through pump systems, and Badger was up 1.3%. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.41%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. In Washington, a look at the nation's balance sheet. The Treasury Department is scheduled to issue its monthly statement for June. The 2015 White House Conference on Aging takes place. There has been one held each decade since the 60s. And a renewed interest in pottery. The movie Ghost was released 25 years ago on July 13, 1990. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
You're listening to Marketplace. I'm Molly Wood, in for Kai Rizdahl. The phrase working your way through school has started to take on new meaning, as in you go to work and your employer will pay your college tuition. Or part of it, anyway. Starbucks ponies up for thousands of employees who are enrolled in online programs at Arizona State University. Chrysler, Fiat, and Chipotle both have free tuition plans. And now the giant insurer Anthem is getting into the education game. From WGBH in Boston, Kirk Carapeza reports on the business of paying your workers to go to college.
After graduating from high school 19 years ago, Darby Conley promised herself she'd enroll in and finish college. She didn't.
I decided to play house with a boyfriend who I was going to, you know, marry and fall madly in love with. And that didn't work out.
To support herself, Darby got a job as a customer service rep with Anthem, one of this country's largest healthcare companies. Sitting at her kitchen table in southern New Hampshire, Darby tells me she became disenchanted.
I mean, Kirk, I wanted to be an astronaut. I wanted to be a lawyer.
At 22, she felt adrift. She tried night school, then online classes at the University of Phoenix.
And my schedule didn't always fit into a 6 to 8 week class.
Fast forward 12 years, Darby's married with two kids, a third on the way, and still about 5 credentials shy of her associate degree. But she and her husband are worried about taking on more student loan debt.
I was still talking another 12 grand. I didn't have that.
It was 2013, and that's when she heard some exciting news. Her employer, Anthem, announced it was piloting a free tuition benefit through Southern New Hampshire University's online program. Darby signed up immediately.
And so I thought, you know what? I have nothing to lose at this point. It was all about, you know, competency-based, and you didn't have to sit in a classroom. And I thought, oh, all right, I'm going to be on maternity leave. I'll figure this out.
Just this month, Anthem announced that it will expand this program, making it available to all of its 55,000 full and part-time employees. Anthem says demand is high.
1,500 signed up for information sessions.
That's Amaze Skinner. It's her job to hire and retain people for Anthem. At the company's headquarters in Indianapolis, Skinner says in just the first week, nearly 1,000 administrative assistants and call center reps applied. Beyond generating loyalty, Skinner predicts the program will actually boost upward mobility within the company.
We want our call centers to be a place where you can have a career and grow.
Corporations are now beginning to step up and say, our employees need opportunity, not just for themselves, but for us.
George Pernsteiner is president of the State Higher Education Executive Officers Association. He's cautiously optimistic about this self-paced model.
Being online in and of itself it means that the student has to be self-motivated because you don't have the kind of peer pressure, you don't have the kind of institutional supports.
A recent study from the University of California, Davis, finds students were 11% less likely to finish and pass an online course than students who took the same course in person. Still, Karen Kadem, a senior analyst with Moody's, says these flexible degree programs should increase access to higher ed and boost enrollment.
Many of these individuals would not have the ability to enroll and complete a degree, either because of the financial implications or from a scheduling perspective.
For working moms like Darby Conley, scheduling her own schooling around her job and her kids is key.
Hey, bud. You guys have a good day?
Mm-hmm.
Back in New Hampshire, Darby's two sons have just come home from school. They show her their graded papers.
Good job! Up on the fridge.
Darby says she struggles to find time for herself.
Where will you sit down in this house with three kids to try to focus on your schoolwork?
Wherever the children aren't is where I take the laptop and I go to.
This past spring, Darby finally earned her associate degree in business administration. Now she's working on her BA in communication. Although she no longer feels stuck in her job, Darby says she plans to stay with Anthem. In Boston, I'm Kirk Carapeza for Marketplace.
The next edition of New York Fashion Week kicks off Monday, and it will look a little different this time around. Say goodbye to the usual headlines, long hem versus short, A-line versus bodycon, the must-have it bag. Actually, that could be in there. On Monday, though, it is all about the gentleman. In fact, this is the first New York Fashion Week devoted solely to menswear. So why suit up now? Marketplace's Mark Garrison reports from New York.
Previous fashion weeks here did show menswear, but it was kind of like those technical awards at the Oscars, the little part of the big event that nobody watches. Now, just like in European fashion capitals, dudes and dude clothes get their own party. That's catnip for folks like stylist George Brescia.
It's a huge, huge, huge deal.
Especially for menswear designers who now have a showcase where they won't be upstaged by women's fashion. It won't be as big. The marquee fall event typically attracts four times the number of designers. But even a smaller event is still a powerful platform for big names like Calvin Klein and Michael Kors, as well as small labels looking to break through.
Fashion Week is traditionally the place that allows designers to be able to get press attention, get buyer attention in a very efficient way.
Wendy Liebman with WSL Strategic Retail says the new Fashion Week highlights a growing interest in selling to men.
We are interested in buying more men's. We've got shoppers in the store. Show us what you've got.
In the U.S., men's apparel sales hit more than $60 billion in 2013, according to NPD Group. Having a male-focused fashion week in summer also aligns it with stores and the way they buy clothes, explains Veronique Hyland, fashion news editor for The Cut.
The menswear will be bought during the summertime, and the womenswear will be bought during the fall.
When menswear lines went out with the women's lines in the fall event, many designers felt it was useless.
They would be showing collections that they had actually already sold.
This time, they've got buyers around the world in town with open wallets and their very own stage to show off their wares. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
After several weeks of pitched battle with the unpaid moderators who keep the news site Reddit operational, news this evening that its CEO, Ellen Pao, is stepping down.
Disagreements over communication between Reddit's paid employees and its volunteer army of moderators got so bad recently that those moderators actually locked up some of Reddit's most popular content, kind of like an unpaid strike. According to a post on Reddit, Steve Huffman, the founder and original CEO, will come back to lead the company. This final note before we go, first, a piece of news that's not that surprising. Shoppers who bring reusable tote bags to the store are more likely to buy organic foods. This obviousness, according to a new study out of Duke University and Harvard Business School, which we saw in Quartz today. But here's the better part. While those shoppers are filling their bags with organic food, they were also 7.3% more likely to buy a little treat. The study looked at shoppers in one California supermarket between 2005 and 2007 and found that their purchases of so-called indulgent items went up when they brought their own bags. The hypothesis from the study? That bringing your own bag makes you feel a little smug, a little like you earned it. The researchers described it as being licensed to buy treats. One important exception, though, parents with reusable totes actually bought fewer indulgent items. Good job, moms and dads. A good Friday on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 211 points. The NASDAQ up 75 points, or 1.5%. The S&P 500 gained 25 points, 1.2%. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace was developed by JJ Yore. Sitara Nieves is senior producer. Deborah Clark is the vice president and executive producer. And I'm Molly Wood. Don't forget, Marketplace will be live from Athens with Kai Rizdahl on Monday. Have a great weekend, everyone. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.